trying to think, like, what's a good movie that people see after brunch? Hi, I'm Andrew Colasmo from the band Kinzu, and you're listening to my chapter of As the Story Grows.
What would you say you do here?
Have a good time all the time.
Dominate.
Who's got it better than us?
Nobody!
What in God's holy name are you blathering about?
Well, I'll tell you what I'm blathering about. I've got information, man.
I want you to be realistic.
What do you love about music?
Man being realistic.
As the story grows.
I always wanted to be part of a small rebellion.
You got this, Travis. Make them wait for it. Boom.
I don't know if I ever told you this story or not.
You didn't.
I'm a pest control guy. So I'm an exterminator. And we picked up an account called Saucony Creek Brewing in Kutztown, right? So I went out there to set the place up, put all the rodent equipment around and everything because they had just been opening and everything. And the first person that I ran into was a young lady, and she stuck out in my mind because she had a full leg brace. Like one of those big mechanical, right? Like, man, you really jacked up your leg, right? So we just got to talking a little bit, and she mentioned, we got to talking about music somehow, because I always do. And she mentioned, oh, my boyfriend's a drummer in a band. Oh, what band is that? Sheep in the Shears.
Huh.
Apparently, this was your former drummer's girlfriend.
No kidding.
And she and the name was so, I thought Sheep in the Shears. What a dumb name. So it stuck in my head. It stuck in my head, and I went home and I Googled it, and that's when I heard Grand Dame for the first time, and I was like, no shit, these guys are really good. So then I found you on Twitter because I followed you, because your name Colasmo is also that of a superhero.
Yeah, it's like, what a dumb name. This guy is just dumb names left and right.
Colasmo. It sounds Colasmo. Like, sounds like, I better tell this guy I like his band or he'll punch my house or something. I don't know, whatever. But I found you on Twitter and I found you to be quite snarky, very sarcastic, almost as much as me. I got a couple years on you.
Yeah.
So I thought, I said, hey, we should be friends. And here we are.
Yeah. Dude, it's easy. I think people take for granted how hard it is to be friends with people after you're like 25, because it's like you had all the friends you have,
right?
And then
right.
Your toolkit for making friends after that kind of diminishes a little bit, and yeah. So I was like, now I'm just looking for people that have the same amount of snarkasm as myself, and then be like, oh yeah, I can get along with.
How did this. I never put snarkasm together?
Man, that's my
brilliant.
My whole wordsmithing thing all the time is like when I hear two words kind of juxtaposed and then they have some similar sound. It's like, all right, how can I merge
right.
these you two can, and just
you can
make,
help,
you make life faster for everybody by about 0.2 seconds.
You can help Norma Jean name all their songs too, because they always do that.
I love that. Norma Jean's a big big influence in a lot of ways. And yeah, that's... Nobody likes them anymore, but I love them still.
Oh.
I just don't know what it is.
I didn't know nobody
production.
Loved them anymore.
Well, I talk to people and they're like, no, it's not like the old genes. Like barely any of the same members in the band and this and that. Like,
right.
Like, yeah, but I don't know. It still has that flavor.
Right.
And that I like that flavor.
Right.
So.
It's got the same guy who's been running the boat since before Aftermath. So like.
Exactly.
It's not that different.
But everybody was on board for Memphis, and then Skogen left, the album.
Right.
Was it Bless the Martyr, Kiss the Child?
Yes. Yeah.
And then Josh left, and then a bunch of people must have jumped ship. But I always get into bands like that. Like long, I don't know the history. It's kind of like TV shows that have been on for 7 seasons and you're getting in on it in like season 6. Yeah. I'm kind of that guy.
Yeah.
Start working my way back through the catalog and seeing what people are doing or how it evolved and stuff. That's usually how I work. I'm always middle and then working outwards. So
I've been saying that for 150 episodes now, man. I'm late to the game guy. I'm like a professional at jumping in like right when the new good album is what breaks them, and I'm into them on that level. And then I always find that crew that was like, "Ugh, you never heard the demo," and I'm like, "I did not. I'm sorry." Yeah, no, so I'm always working. Like, I'm always dividing the discography and working both directions and trying to decide which one I like more. You know,
it's like you're like phase two hipster. So like phase one was like, I knew the band before they were big. It's like, no, I knew the band after they were big, and then they kind of had that lull, and they're back to doing like farm shows or something, and then.
Exactly.
I got on board with they did a 7-inch that like got buried in the back of the record store and that's the ground floor I'm on. Farm I'm shows. On the second ground floor. It's a split level career.
You're definitely pointing out our geography by mentioning farm shows. We're both eastern to mid Pennsylvania guys.
Yeah. the old farm show circuit.
Yeah.
Yep. Mm.
You haven't made it until you had a record deal and then at one point played a show where they were also selling quilts.
It's like you couldn't sell a damn t-shirt there, but the quilt people at the table next to you are just murdering.
Exactly.
Oh, come on.
Exactly. It has to include some sort of instead of getting a bar tab or free beer, it has to include some sort of a food ticket that gets to the band. You know, we've all done this where it's kind of like, we'll even let you watch the particular fill in the blank show for free or something like that. You get to see some weird display of bareback horse riding or some dumb shit like that.
Yeah, that's right.
It's like, I'm in Pennsylvania. Woof. You know,
this is your per diem and this is a ticket for the petting zoo. They bite. Don't stick your fingers in there.
Exactly.
Like, oh, okay.
Right.
We've made it.
Right. We're going to help you load your equipment in. There's no back line, so we're just going to have a tractor pull up with this weird trailer on it. You can put all your equipment in that.
And then wave goodbye to it because you don't know where it's going.
Boy, I hope that goes where I'm going. Bye, drums. Hope I see you again.
My entire life.
Tell me how this Sheep in the Shears music stuff started for you.
You know, I think I've kind of perpetually been in bands and writing music, and this would have been around like 2009, and I'd had some surgery on my ear that was like kind of minor, and was having trouble with like I was living in West Reading with my girlfriend, and just having like trouble with that, and said I can't do this anymore, and I'm gonna like kind of move home, get this surgery done, and kind of recuperate, because it was about like a week or two of trying to get back to normal with hearing and balance and stuff. And
what was wrong with your ear?
I had a cholesteatoma.
I asked.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah.
What the hell's that?
Moving on.
Oh, who hasn't? Quit bitching.
Oh, that. it's a cyst that you get from like having swimmer's ear a lot or something when you're younger.
Okay.
And it's kind of like your skin sloughs off like it does everywhere else in your body, but it doesn't have any place to go, and it kind of builds up and forms this cyst, and that can get infected or releases chemicals like the infection does that kind of breaks down like your bones of hearing and can do a lot of like a lot of damage. So they had discovered this and said, yeah, we have to operate on it and stuff. And I said, all right, well, this, you know, stuff was going, weird things were kind of going on in my life at the time. And it was not in a relationship that I was happy with and stuff. And I said, yeah, I'll move home. I'll get this done. I'll kind of like recuperate there. And you get on like a kind of sleeping for 48 hours straight, I remember, was like the first couple days, and because there's not really a whole lot else you can do when you're in a, you know, recovery state like that. And when I have had enough sleep, but decide to keep sleeping, I'll have the weirdest dreams that I've ever had.
Okay.
So a lot of it was like the imagery and the lyricism that kind of came out of Sheep in This Year's was built on that sort of just like the imagery and things, and then kind of folded that into like stuff I was just going through, and like why relationships are hard, and like people, how people function together, and yeah, that was like the summer 2009, and had kind of written like the drum parts out on GarageBand, and like recorded some guitars and things at home, and then posted them to SoundCloud, and just kind of like showed it to a couple of people, and just started talking about it like that. And then, excuse me, my friend Alex, who was a drummer in my previous band, Seconds from the End, he had moved to Arizona to do like sound engineering. So he had moved back and set up a studio and said, you know, if you ever need to want to record anything, you know, I've got the studio up. I said, yeah, actually I do have, you know, an EP's worth of things. I'd love to come by and, you know, lay some stuff down. And that's around the time that I got in touch with Brent, because we all kind of hung out in the circle of friends, and Brent and I played in a band before. That was Alice's Adventures. So they had a drummer that left, and he had taken over. And that's how we had known each other. And like when you play shows around here, you know how it is. It's like, you know, everybody's in a farm show circuit sort of deal. You know, everyone's kind of
incestuous.
It is. It's you know, that y'all know each other because it's a really kind of a parochial sort of you know, existence out here. It's like nobody's competing, and everybody's kind of, you know, playing shows together. And oh, this week it's band A, C, and D, and last week it was band B, C, and D. And mm-hmm. You know, it's all it's all kind of like that. So. Yeah, that's how I knew him. He came in, he like slated on the recordings, and we said, okay, let's do some like gang vocals and stuff, because I had idea, I wanted it to have that kind of, you know, lively sort of group vibe. And yeah, that at that point was looking for like a bass player and a guitar player and stuff to kind of play live, and that's kind of how it came together. I wrote five songs, tracked them. Like, I can't play drums, and Brent was like, I can play drums on that, and he did a hell of a job in tracking that. And then it was like, okay, we have this set of recordings, now what do we do with it next? And it's like, oh, you could play shows, you could tour on this, you could this and, you know, do this and that. And then it said, you know, that feeling you get when you want to go and play live again kind of enters your mind, and yeah, you just get back out there and give it your best shot. So
the first thing that I ever heard, I got the experience to see you guys too, what looked like a pro level quality video. And I very much got the impression that Sheep in the Shears was probably bigger than it actually was. It was, you know, it's all in the presentation. It came across like, wow, I wonder what these guys are doing. And by the time I got around to it, you guys have already been defunct. Like just recently, I think I tapped in right as you guys were ending, and I was like, ah, see, this is what I do, you know.
Well, yeah, I mean, that video would have been 2013. So, and John Kumar had shot that. He was actually a cartoonist originally, out of New York. And now he shoots major videos everywhere. So he kind of came in on the ground floor of that guy's career. And he was just a really cool guy to work with. And I give him a lot of credit for like helping us look, like present ourselves in a way that we, you know, wanted to,
yeah,
to be presented, because I think I mean, there's so many articles going around today where you have these bands that, you know, Zach always said, Zach was the lead guitar, and he was a guitar player in Sheep in the Shears, and he said, he's like, you know, we kind of have to have this, like, fake it till you make it sort of business model because of how, because of what kind of music we play, and that it's, you know, it's got to be, people aren't going to really give you a lot of rope unless they feel like when they tell somebody else about you that there's some substantiation to it, that they can say, yeah, they have an album and professional recordings and they get them mastered and their backline looks like a certain way and they have merch and everything has a little bit of cohesiveness to it. So
I know what you mean. By 2013, the standard has been set so high for bands that you're not allowed to have a crappy sounding demo anymore. You're just not.
Nope. That there's no irony in it anymore.
Yeah,
that
exactly. Right.
To,
right.
It's trying to extrapolate what somebody might sound like or how good they actually are through a bad demo is just not something people put the effort into anymore. Right. Where back in when I started listening to demo stuff and tapes and things like that, that was like early 2000s, and it was kind of cool to see the raw sort of like that Conor Oberst sort of thing that was going around at the time with swapping demos and crappy MP3s.
So by then
we were kind of in the same boat as like hundreds of other bands where, you know, we have to showcase ourselves in a way that is a little easier for people to digest, you know, and because the music, there's a lot going on with the music, and that's just what I'm told by mostly everybody, that there's like, you got to listen to it more than one time to really like understand what is going on sometimes. I'm like, yeah, I know, it's like it's kind of always been that way, layering stuff, and the lyrics are a little cryptic here and there, and
I love that.
And, but that's you're doing the video like that kind of helped boil it down for people a little bit.
Agreed. Yeah, you get the whole package. That's how I was introduced to the band was I got to see, visualize it. I understand. It helps you understand roles in the band. Everybody knows the lead singer is the guy in the middle in the front with the mic, and he's singing. Yeah, duh. But I mean, like, I got the whole vibe. At least the video did a great job presenting me with what I thought was the vibe. You know.
Yeah, that was essentially us playing a live show. Was that video? I just wish we could have played more of them and for more people to see it in that respect. But I think the impression that you took away from it was what I think we were all hoping to to push. Yeah,
and I don't want to harp on them because it's gone. But since that was my intro to it, I have to point out that I've heard great guitar work before. I've heard layered guitars. I've heard clean borderline metal sounding guitars. I've heard double kicked aggressive drums before. You had the whole bass player singing, screaming dude in the background thing. I heard it all before, seen it all, done it all before. But you always look for that one unique thing that helps the band stand out. And at the risk of sounding like an ass kisser, it was your voice. Because you come across to me like one of those guys who you kind of have like a Jeremy Sunny Day Real Estate thing going. Where there's aggressive, there's definitely, I want to scream, but I don't have, like, no matter how hard I belt, I'm not going to sound like Hatebreed. I don't have that kind of guttural bleh kind of a thing to my voice. You have a surprisingly high, clean voice for how hard you're shouting.
Yeah.
And your vocals are kind of what jumped out at me is like, wow, this is like some of the, God, sorry if this is offensive, but this might be the heaviest emo band I've ever heard. You know,
there were this one guy that did, man, we got a mess. He was a producer for we showed a demo to him, and he's like, "Oh, it's like an indie band with balls." I was like, "All right, that's a pretty good, like, your seven words or less description sure. of something." I was like, "Yeah, but yeah, like the heaviest emo band, that never really bothered me either. I was in a screamo band and with Seconds from the End, where it's like screamo hardcore music, and that was kind of like heyday of that, you know, that era. And yeah, it's for me, I was like until about maybe eighth or ninth grade. Yeah, till eighth or ninth grade, I was like singing soprano in the high school choir and stuff. Like, it just like stuff never really dropped. And I have, you can hear how I'm speaking now, and my register's a little bit lower. But when it comes singing, when it comes time to be like when singing in a band and you have to really be heard, you can hear so many albums where they're overproduced and it's like the guy's singing low, but the band is just riffing. And there's like, how is that going to make any sense in a live situation?
Right.
Like if you were to play like the Fire Company and it's like a not a great acoustically set up place, but kids would always go there and they would love to hear bands and see shows there. And it's exactly. Like, how are you going to make sure that registers?
I don't mean to cut you off, but I heard Brian Johnson from AC/DC does that high AC/DC whole lot of Rosie voice. He is practically whispering into that microphone.
Oh yeah,
because his throat is a dumpster at this point. And
right.
And the only way you could, and I've often thought to myself, like, okay, but you're AC/DC. You've probably got 13 tractor trailer loads of sound equipment to make sure your vocals sound great. So
right.
You can pull it off. What would AC/DC do at a farm show? It wouldn't be mixed right. It would sound horrible, you know?
It would still have like 3 miles of Angus's stacks behind there and like sheep walking around don't eat that. Yeah, and then he would just be like dying up there, I guess. You
right,
know,
it's right.
Like, I can't imagine how they used to do that stuff. You hear different stories about, you know, how bands took care of their business on stage with things like that. But that was my whole thought. It's like, I would love to deliver. I mean, I can't pick what my voice is, and it's definitely that. It's always going to have that like tenor to it. And, you know, it was nice to be able to kind of find your little pocket of space that you can sing in that isn't going to get crowded out by like some two-step down, drop D sort of guitar
right.
power stuff,
right.
or some like dissonant chords and things. Like, you kind of like when you can sing in that register, it allows you to kind of sit on top of things a little bit, and it never really felt like straining to me. Maybe it comes off like that sometimes, but it just felt like, oh, I'm being heard when I'm here,
right?
And that's the only place in the scale that it really feels like I'm putting some like real effort in, you know, like I'm pushing, and it's like, wow, that, because everybody else, when if you watch that video, for example, everybody else is just like giving it as much as they can, like so, just so hard. So if I was there, like, not, you know, that's how all the shows and how all the writing was. Everything is like this 110% sort of vibe. So if it's like, if I just go up there and do this very classically trained sort of delivering of a voice and like a moderate sort of, I was like, nah, that's going to really pull the music down a little bit.
Doesn't translate.
And it's not, it's not going to show the same type of emphasis that you know, Brent, Bobby, and Zach were delivering and
right.
every single note they were playing. Right. So that was kind of part of it. And I get compared to a lot of like Anthony Green, like Circus Survive sort of stuff. I would have like
sure.
guys I would play like give guitar lessons to. They gave me like a, you know, a Circus Survive album. It's like, yeah, they're all right. It's not like, I'm not like huge into them, but it's nice that they kind of say, oh, you remind me of Aaron Marsh from Copeland sometimes, or you remind me of Anthony Green. It's like, oh, it means like you're kind of at least operating in a environment that you know, isn't so far, nor it's like, it's just weird and I don't like it. Like, nobody, you know, nobody that was a, like, purchaser or, like, a real fan of music ever, you know, told me that.
So I got you.
It was usually industry people.
No, I know what you mean.
Just not having a marketable voice, so...
I don't know that it's not marketable. I mean, again, I'm not an industry person, so what do I know? But I'm looking for something unique to listen to, not, like again, you take all the metal out there or whatever, and take all the heavy aggressive music and everything, and it's really tough to differentiate the vocals.
And, that's true.
And then half the time can't understand what they're saying anyway. And then lyrically, then you almost have to pick apart what they're saying. And half of it's really ignorant, dumb shit. And like, this guy is not only singing from his feet. And yeah, like you said, I can't pick my voice. It just comes out as a higher register, whatever.
Right.
But he's singing with muscles in his toes. And he's also painting like this really lyrical picture. Like, the songs just resonated with me. I don't know what else to say, and I mean... Moving forward, I'm really glad that you are doing something new, and that's kind of what we're here to discuss, is the fact that you just have a new project and you have a new EP that's out, and I love it. I think it's...
Well, thank you.
And I'm not just kissing your butt, because who are you? You're nobody. You're nothing. Right? No, I'm kidding.
Well, you know, and I feel that it's there's great, merit man. To talking about, you know, every... You know, any part of this, just because, you know, had not been for Sheep in this years, we wouldn't be talking today.
Very,
you know?
Very
and
true.
And it's like, that's definitely one of those things where if you can't be like, all right, well, I'm going to take a break from this for a year or two, I'm burned out and stuff. And it's like, when I start another project, everything's going to be different. Like, unless you're a really prolific artist, I mean, you see, like, Jack White has gone through all sorts of different, you know, incarnations of, like, his person.
Sure.
And he always kind of has that gritty Detroit sort of, like, pentatonic type of crooning sort of vibe in his voice. And it's like, oh, yeah, it's a Jack White album. I feel like, you know, between whether it's Sheep in the Shears or Kinzu or, you know, things I've done previous to that, it always kind of had that, like, lyrical... imagery and things, and that just is kind of the way of saying something to the effect that it's interesting to me,
right?
Instead of saying like, you're hurting, I'm hurting, let's hurt together,
right?
It's like, get specific. Like, what does it really feel like? You know,
let's start there then. The imagery, you're pronouncing it Kinzu.
Yeah, I pronounce, yeah, it's Kinzu.
Oh, I'm saying Kinzua, so I'm wrong.
Well, no, I think it's a pretty flexible...
Yeah.
Whatever helps people spell it.
You said that was the name came from, you told me, you grew up there or something?
Well, I spent, my summertime occasionally there, and my dad is from Bradford, Pennsylvania, and he... you know, he and his brothers and sister, where they lived wasn't too far from Kinzu State Park. And I remember when I was young, you know, go with my parents and took the dogs, and we, like, you know, walked up there, and it's this gigantic trestle, like the Kinzu Bridge is this gigantic railroad trestle that was about 400 feet up from the ground, so you could see over the tops of the trees and things. And it, at the time, was, I guess, the largest trestle in, like, in the northeastern United States or North America, depending on the time frame. And it was blown down by a tornado, or like an F5 tornado came through and, like, ripped this this bridge, so it literally cut the bridge in half. So you can see all the stanchions laying on the ground of this valley of this viaduct, and half the bridge remains there. Hmm. And they didn't reconstruct it. They kind of just said, you know, this is how it's going to be, and they fenced it off at the very precipice of it, and you know, kind of marked it and said, yeah, this is half a bridge now. And that, I feel like that's a good allegory for me as a musician and life, that it's like, yeah, I like things to be very well constructed, and I want it to be tall and fast and have a lot of room to see everything, but it's never going to be completely done. Then, like,
you get an F5 tornado and it doesn't matter.
Yeah. It's never going to, like, get to the other side. Right. Because it's, you know, I like to take things to kind of a nebulous place, and then the other side is kind of for the listener to distinguish for themselves. So
something else that surprised me when you sent me the stuff, and thanks for doing that, so I got to listen to it ahead of time. The artwork was surprisingly dark. I saw the pictures for the album cover, and I thought, I wonder what the story is behind that. And I purposely didn't ask you because I wanted to hear it organically here on the show. So what is the deal with the artwork? Who did it? It's great. It's fantastic.
Oh my God, isn't it the best? Ed Kuhn did the artwork. Ed was the bass player in Seconds from the End back when I was, this was like the mid-aughts, and when we were like touring and had some label representation, and he became an illustrator, and is now, he's out in Pittsburgh now. So he does graphics design and illustration. And I said, I'd love for you to do this. You know, I recorded these songs, and I said, he was like, just send them over. I'll listen to them. And he loved it. And that came out of him listening to the tracks. And I just thought, like, what he had done, was so poignant. And I said, this is perfect. This is exactly dark or not. Like, yeah, that's it. As the lyrics go and the imagery and some of the things that he knows about me, I was like, yeah, it's very on the nose.
Got it. So this is a culmination. I guess we did discuss this a little bit because that's actually ringing a bell now. But what you see for the album cover is a culmination of what Ed's interpretation of taking the whole thing in was, and he painted it. It's not like you found a cool painting and bought it from a guy. He actually designed this for you based on what he heard.
Yeah, he drew cool every tree. Yeah, I know. It's like, you don't usually get that kind of. I feel like album art nowadays it doesn't have to be so grandiose. You know, mm-hmm. it can kind of just get somebody's attention when they're flipping through vinyls at the store. You know, it shows up on Spotify, but I mean, it has that vibe where it's like, wow, this was tailor made. What I was thinking at a certain time, and I couldn't have been happier with the work he did on it. It was just like, he's a brilliant guy, and it's really fortunate that I was able to have that done. So
that's neat, because I was going to ask you what it necessarily represented, but you kind of weren't even in control of that.
No, I'm a big proponent of. While when it comes to music and how things are written and how songs are constructed, I'm a huge control freak about that stuff. I just like it if it's not going to really like give me that cathartic sort of, you know, goes exactly the way I'm thinking about it, then I'm never satisfied. I won't be satisfied with it, and playing it live is going to be a nightmare and all that. But once, like, the visual part of it, I love to see how people interpret what I'm trying to say and what I'm talking about. And that was one of those times where, like, wow, he really got it. And it had that, like, it had heft to it, you know?
Right.
It was just, it's heavy, emotionally heavy music, you know, counterpointed by some heavy visual art. And yeah, he just, yeah, like I can't wait to show that to more people. I feel like that just,
I'm hoping, I mean, that's
yeah, that's the it's kind of what I want to do going forward, where you had like Aseo Andrews always did like the Circus Survive art. So if you have somebody, if you're doing some kind of moody, spacey, ethereal sort of stuff, and you have somebody that can illustrate or paint in a way that's got that like modern surrealist sort of vibe, I always think that's like a good marriage. So you can expect the next EP to have more of his work on it.
I love it.
Because we're gonna record strictly about 5 or 6 songs at a time, and that gives him enough time to collaborate. And
you said you were going to purposely aim to do 5 or 6 songs at a time. Is that just because the rules are off? There are no full lengths anymore. You can do whatever you want, or is that specifically based around Ed and the vision for the artwork?
Well, timeline-wise, it's a little bit to do with that, but Ed's always just allowed to work at whatever clip he wants when it comes to creating that stuff, because the intricacies of what he's doing is kind of what makes that you know. But yeah, I've always been into just doing short length sort of stuff, because a lot of all the records that I can remember, like the ones that I love, they're like EPs, because they just put their like 5 kick-ass all killer no filler sort of stuff on there and said, yeah, this is who we sound like, and you're gonna go and see them play at you'd see them play at Warped Tour or Take Action or something, like mm-hmm. some of these bands like way back in the day, and they're doing like a 35-40 minute set at the most, so they're playing 5 or 6 songs, and they're playing, you're guaranteed to hear every song you heard off the EP because you liked it, and you liked the EP songs, and it just kind of was always a good neatly tied up experience.
Yep.
So, yeah, just for me, we're constantly, like Monty and I have maybe about 15 things in the hopper that we're like saying, yeah, this is going to get recorded. But, you know, to do it on all in a full length all at once is going to pit, I don't know, it's always, people are always going to have 5 that, you know, are better than the other 5 to them, and I always wanted to kind of be a little bit more compact and experienced in a tighter space. And for me, with the like the lyrical concepts and stuff, and with the Sheep and the Shears album, it was like telling a story about marriage and what people give up in themselves and the ramifications of that, like later in the song, and what the people's love for others and what drives them to do, like that's a very you know, a pretty basic essential sort of concept, but I didn't want to stretch it out over 10 songs.
You don't need 13 songs to say your point.
Yeah, you don't need to be like belaboring the point through track 6 and 7 that it's like, oh yeah, he's a real pain in the ass, like it just he can,
right.
You can, I like to try and do more with less when it comes to that stuff. So I only think about 5 songs at a time when it comes to lyrics and writing those things and how I journal and come up with how things are going to be said and sung. It's doing it as a full length these days from like a business model standpoint, I get a lot of people just won't do it because it's like, oh, you're just throwing half your songs away because they'll never get listened to, or they're going to get filtered out by some algorithm because the other 2 songs are what people listen to the most.
Sure.
And then,
right.
You know, there's that whole end to it. I feel like taking an essential approach to that and saying, yeah, this is we're going to do the best possible job we can do on tracking these 5.
Concentrate on what's in front of you, not the whole, like, I've gone to the studio before and had 2 weeks to record 12 songs. And it's like, man, I really, do you want 12 songs finished or do you want me to murder 8?
Right.
You know
right.
what I mean?
Eh. And that, and depending on who your producer might be, that can be, I mean, it's a crucible to do even 5. I remember we knew some of the guys in August Burns Red, like back in the day, cause they're from Lancaster.
Yeah.
And the stories that they would tell that, oh my God, his name's escaping me. Yeah. Matt Griner. He said the first time recording with Adam D that, you know, he said he like went through a song and like felt like he did an A+ job of it. And Adam D was like, no, that's only about 70%, 60% of where it needs to be. I mean, there's that whole end of like, imagine trying to do that 10 or 11 times to like think that you're leaving it all out there. And then it's like, oh, it's not good enough for the producer.
Right.
You know, that turns it into a real rough experience. We're doing 5 songs. That's a day's worth of work for us.
Yeah.
That was, I think, tracking 5 songs over at Abbeville for the Kinzu EP took about 11 hours, like with the minus like the setup.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, it's just that was for 5, and we got to do it all at once. You know, that's how Alex likes to do it. For it's like to have that consistency.
Did the theme suffer at all by only having 5 songs instead of 7 for this?
No. There was one song. It got.
Yeah, let's get under the hood.
Use it in the next one. So, okay. And the other one was like an intro that acted as a kind of a setup that moved into to the song that got cut. So we basically cut the first 2 out, and it was fine because Marsh's was. It still had the good, like, lyrically, I was able to, you know, frame that in a way that if the song goes kind of sequentially, it still made sense. We didn't try to write a concept EP or anything like that. It was, but, yeah, cutting the 2 songs out, it didn't impact at all, really.
Okay.
Yeah.
So what's the theme of the Kinzu EP?
That, like, things you own will own you. So that was kind of the kind of just destroys people. You know, it's
very figure, much, very much the impression. The first impression.
Yeah, I don't want to paint. Yeah, I don't want to paint it with too broad a brush, and I don't want to overemphasize the point because I think that's something everybody can kind of accept, whether they want to accept it or not. I think they know that's a problem that exists these days.
Sure.
That, you know, there's a lot of one-upsmanship in our like social media existences, and that's why I don't go on Facebook anymore. I just I stopped that, and I think around the time I like called it quits with Sheep in this year, as I said, I can't do any of this. Stuff becomes so, it's about what you have and not who you are. And stuff became so conscious of, you know, things and where you are in your status in the world.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, I don't care about any of this. And as a band like that, you kind of had to. And that like really made it tough because, you know, it's about, you know, I don't want to worry about endorsement stuff. And I didn't want to worry about people's, you know, interests outside of music, and I just wanted to like write songs and make the stuff that's in my head just be outside of it for a change, and then like put it on the shelf. It's kind of like that's my only interest, and when you're driving your band and music through a social media construct, it makes it conform to this, you know, thing about like, how good does your band look? Is you know, what do the analytics say? How many units did you move based on where you played? Like, it, yeah, that part of it just like killed it for me. So Kinzu's like a commentary on on that. And I mean, each song, if we can get into it specifically if you want, but broadly, it was just about have a home as big as you want. It's just going to be a tomb, you know. The biggest part of what everybody is should be inside of them. It shouldn't be the thing they like wrap around them.
And clear.
Go
ahead.
Visit the site at asthestorygrows.com and subscribe so you don't miss anything.
Special thanks to Brian Patton, who helps me out with the interviews, scheduling, and editing of this show.
Visit the Bandcamp link in the notes of this show for some free cover songs, some free tunes, and merch.
If you like what you heard and would like to help, there's a Patreon link on every episode. Or you can look for the dollar sign on the website for one-time donations. One good word and
I'm gone. If you can't afford to donate, no problem. Tell a friend, and thank you so much for listening today. Oh, as the story grows, the more I want to know, the more I want to show.
We love you. Take care. Bye-bye.